Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm very well. Today on the podcast, we have Chris Tobey, who's running for Kentucky Auditor. We just finished that interview. It went really well, I think. And he has a lot of financial expertise that he's bringing to his race. So
he does.
Yeah, so I'm excited for you guys to hear that. I'm excited about this race. This is going to be a great race, I think.
Yeah,
good
I think
candidates
so too.
Running, including Mr. Tobey. And we're really glad that he came to talk to us about his candidacy. So, but before we get to that, we have lots of stuff to talk about. Jasmine's going to tell us about the new Democratic Women's Caucus that's formed in the State House. I'm going to talk to us about a couple of bills that are winding their way through the legislature. This week, Jasmine is going to do Good Bill, Bad Bill. I did it last week, so she's going to do it this week. And then we have Quick Hits and a short story about a piece in Politico. So without any further ado, Jasmine, tell us about the Democratic Women's Caucus.
All right. Well, we have a new caucus. Robert, you told me to find out about it, and so I did. I talked to Representative Lisa Wilner about it, so I have some information about it now.
Awesome.
It's an informal caucus made up of all 18 of the House Democratic women. And it's actually chaired by Representative Wilner and co-chaired by Representative Mackenzie Cantrell. You know, they're meeting weekly informally, but they do have three goals that they're working on. The first one is legislation. The second one is changing the culture in Frankfort from like small things to big things like accommodations for women, mm-hmm. you know, like women who may need to breastfeed in Frankfort. Do they have adequate accommodations for things like that? Mm-hmm. So that's number two. And number three is women supporting other women. And they want to make sure, you know, this just isn't about legislation specifically for women. It's more about, you know, achieving good economic, educational, and health outcomes, because when women thrive, we're all better off.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're starting on focusing with just a few bills that they all unanimously support, because even though they're all House Democrats, you know, they have varying ideas about different things. So they're sponsoring bills that they all unanimously support. This year, the bills that they are sponsoring are Attica Scott's bill to eliminate the pink tax. We talked about that on the podcast.
Yeah. That would be about female hygiene products at colleges and universities. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A bill about addressing sexual harassment and discrimination in the legislature.
Right.
So there are actually two of these. One of them is Kelly Flood's bill, HB 83.
Uh-huh.
But now there's also been a bipartisan bill sponsored by Kim Moser. They are putting their support into that bill as well. Josie Raymond's bills on all-day kindergarten and universal pre-K, and HB 126, which is a bill about transparency and pensions. And we've kind of talked about all of these except for HB 126 and HB 60 and 83. So just a little bit about HB 126. This would require state-administered retirement systems to follow the state model procurement code when contracting for investment management services, and also give the attorney general jurisdiction to investigate and prosecute violations of the ethical and fiduciary duties of investment managers of the retirement systems.
Yeah, this actually, we'll hear this in our interview later, but this is a bill that was cited by Chris Tobey as something that he thought was a good idea. So
yes, that bill's notable sponsors are Lisa Wilner, Charles Booker, Rocky Adkins, Josie Raymond, Mackenzie Cantrell, the now official Jim Glenn, Terry Branham Clark, Mary Lou Marzen, Nima Kulkarni, Attica Scott, Maria Sorella, Sherilyn Stevenson, Ashley Tackett Lafferty. So a lot of people that we've talked to or talked about on the podcast are sponsoring that bill.
Yeah.
And then the other ones are HB 60 and HB 83. HB 83 was Kelly Flood's bill that addresses harassment and discrimination in the legislature. It would detail basically a procedure for what to do, you know, when someone has some kind of claim, and it would go to the Ethics Commission.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's been a bipartisan bill that's sponsored by Kim Moser. Rocky Adkins is the Democrat on the bill. Adam Koenig, Jerry Miller, and James Tipton.
Right.
And I think Kelly Flood worked with Kim Moser and got all of the language that she wanted in that bill. So they have differences, but they're very similar. And and I think everything that everyone in the Democratic Women's Caucus wanted is in that bill. So they're also putting their support towards that.
Right.
So that is the new caucus that we have in some of the bills that they're sponsoring. I don't think that they'll add any more. They want to keep their focus, you know, narrow and talk about bills that they all unanimously support. But I definitely think this is a really positive thing. There is a women's caucus, but I don't really know that they're active at all or anything.
Well, it's bipartisan. And right. You're really narrowing what you're able to do when you have a bipartisan caucus. I mean, there's some stuff as Democrats that they're going to want to do. And I don't think that they would have unanimous support in the women's caucus for eliminating.
Right. I think it's very different than, say, the bipartisan pro-life caucus, because that's about a specific issue that they all agree about. Right. And so a bipartisan women's caucus would be a little different. So I don't think that there's much happening there. So now we have this new informal caucus of Democratic women that are trying to get things done and changed in Frankfort.
Very interesting stuff. Yeah, the need for the HB 60 or HB 83 is, I mean, that kind of came up because it's not technically against the rules of the legislature to perform sexual harassment. That's like one of the issues we had last year with Jeff Hoover. So that's just a good example of why something like this is super necessary, you know, like that.
Right. Who's thinking about these things,
exactly,
right? You know?
Exactly. And that's kind of interesting that HB 126 is something that they're supporting, because that's not technically about anything related to gender, really, but it's a bill that a strong Democratic woman is sponsoring, and you know, that's a place you can take bills like this to get additional support. So that's really cool stuff. I'm really glad to see that that's happening. Thank you, Lisa Wilner, for talking to us about it. Okay, Jasmine, there's several bills that are making their way through the legislature. The solar bill that I talked about last week as a bad bill actually did pass the House, but There was some drama that happened there, and some stuff that we need to tell you about. So it's this SB 100 is the solar net metering bill. In case you were wondering, you can go back and listen to last week's show to learn more about what's actually in it and how solar net metering works. But when we talked about it last week, it had actually already flown through the Senate on a 23-12 vote, which did actually see some Republicans voting no on it. So this week it actually passed the House, but it passed with an amendment, a floor amendment. HFA 1, House Floor Amendment 1, was sponsored by Jim Duplessis, who's a Republican from E-Town. And that amendment made the bill a lot more palatable to the solar industry. So most of the items that we discussed last week, which were put forth by Matt Partymiller, who is the executive director of the Kentucky Solar Industries Association, they actually were addressed in this amendment. So stuff like leasing is now allowed, so you can actually lease solar panels to generate electricity. A single administrative case can set the rates for everybody. This is apparently something that's really important to them, because you don't want different administrative rates that are different administrative cases that can set different rates for different people, and it gets really confusing. And how much money am I going to make? It makes it much more difficult to understand how much money you're going to get back.
Right.
So one single case can set the rates for everybody. And now the Public Service Commission has to consider benefits as well as cost when setting rates that would be paid back for this solar energy. So this amendment, in addition to those things which were specifically cited in the article in the Herald Leader that Matt Partymiller wrote, the amendment also allows the solar industry advocates to intervene in PSE cases. So, you know, the PSE decides they need to intervene in a specific case, but the person doesn't necessarily have the expertise to do it. The solar energy industry can actually advocate on behalf of that person. And it also allows installments built in the next 5 years to be grandfathered into the old system. So if you know, you have something in the works, or you know, you decide you want to get in now while the getting's good and you get those better rates, you can go ahead and build that system. So that kind of gives you a little bit more runway to get a solar system in place.
Yeah, that definitely sounds more palatable.
Yeah, so just as how to feel about this, HFA 1, the amendment, it actually drew some muted praise from solar advocates. So Tom Fitzgerald, who's like one of the most important environmental lawyers in all of Kentucky, he was quoted in the Courier Journal as saying, quote, "The bill is greatly improved over the industry-crafted bill," unquote. So, you know, he doesn't hate it, I guess, and that's good. Obviously, Mr. Fitzgerald doesn't want the law to change, but since there is, you know, some consensus from the Republican-led legislature to change the system, you know, he's saying that this is a good thing. This is a good thing, even though it's better to not change anything. So the amendment actually also caused concern for utilities. They actually said they were still studying it to see what they thought about it. So the fact that, you know, Tom Fitzgerald is like, meh, it's okay, and utilities are thinking this might not be great, that makes me think that, you know, this is probably something good. So the amendment, once it passed, it was enough to peel away much of the opposition. Democrats like Joni Jenkins and Mary Lou Marzian actually ended up voting for SB 100 on the floor. There were still several people that voted against it. But yeah, leadership, Rocky Adkins and Joni Jenkins. And I think George, I'm actually not sure if Mr. Brown did, Representative Brown, voted for it as well. But anyways, now that the bill has passed the House with the amendment, it heads back to the Senate, and the Senate has to figure out what they want to do. It's highly unlikely that the Senate is going to concur with the House's changes. So that was what could happen. The House could say, okay, these changes are good with us, and they could pass it, and it would go on to the governor to be signed. But Senator Damon Thayer said the Senate likes their bill, so probably what's going to happen is it's going to go to a conference committee. So some senators and some representatives will get together. They're going to hammer out their differences. They're going to come to a consensus bill that will go to both the House and the Senate, and it will either pass or not on an up or down vote. So we'll see what happens. I'm not totally sure who in the Republican caucus is opposed to what or what they necessarily want. Jim Duplessis is obviously the guy that sponsored the floor amendment. So, you know, it will be interesting to see how this continues to evolve, what changes are going to be in the bill that comes out of the conference committee. But we are going to see and watch what happens next with this bill.
So do you think we end up with a bill that looks more like the one with the amendments, or do you think some of those will be wiped away?
I think it will have at least some of the stuff that's included in those amendments, because obviously if it could have passed the House without that amendment at all, that's what you know, Speaker Osborne would have brought to the floor,
right?
But clearly the House needed some of these changes, and the caucus, the Republican caucus in the House and whatever, in addition to all the Democrats, you know, they wanted to see some changes to the bill. And I don't know exactly what's going to get left out. That will be something interesting to watch, just kind of how far the Republicans in the Senate can bring this bill back towards what the industry wants. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see. And I'm obviously don't have that many sources inside the Republican House caucus. It'll be interesting to watch to see what happens out of that conference committee. So, Jasmine, the solar industry is one thing. The battle lines are a little bit more blurry, but of course, something that's got some major play so far in this legislative session is abortion. So there are two abortion-related measures that have now passed the House of Representatives. HB 148 is a bill, I think we've talked about it at least briefly before. It would make abortion illegal in Kentucky if Roe versus Wade is overturned. You talked about this at the start of the session.
I did.
Yeah, that's right. It actually passed with only 20 nay votes, all of which were from Louisville and Lexington, except for Derek Graham of Frankfort, the third county where Hillary Clinton carried in 2016, and Patty Minter, who is a progressive from Bowling Green.
That means that quite a few Democrats voted for
this. Yes. Yeah, including Rocky Adkins, who did vote for it. Yeah. And he's running for governor, and we should probably mention that. So Mary Lou Marzian, who is my representative, she is famous, at least in my mind, for trolling. She has been...
Right. This is my favorite thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, Mary, whenever we were talking to some people in the legislature last year, we said, okay, it must be difficult for you as a Democrat to transition to being in the opposition. And there were some people that had some stuff to say about that. I think Mary Lou Marzian in some kind of way has like always been in the opposition, even when the Democrats were in charge, because she's like so much more progressive than the Democratic House before. But she does stuff like this often. She offered a floor amendment, which would have required all women of childbearing age to send a notarized statement to the Cabinet for Health and Family Services each month saying whether or not they were pregnant. Jasmine. Yeah, that didn't pass. Yeah, they voted that one down. I think that's
yeah,
really
I'm
funny.
Guessing a lot of her floor amendments don't make it through.
I do love that. Like, I want to know who like the LRC staffer is that has to write this thing up, you know? But anyways, yeah, she does stuff like this. This is obviously poking fun at the fact that like we're so up in the business of women and you know, their sex lives and their bodies, etc., that, you know, we might as well just go the rest of the way and force them to tell us whether or not they're pregnant every single month and make them send a note. So that, you know, that's the...
A notarized statement, too. Yeah, we got to find a notary.
Big notary and big pregnancy testing. That's who she's in the pocket of, I guess.
Yeah.
So there were some Republicans who actually made the case that if Roe is overturned, then Kentucky needed a legal framework for dealing with abortion. You know, Jason Nemes, I think, made this case. He was tweeting at Adam Edelin trying to get him to say like what he thought about like what should be the law if Roe is overturned. I'm not totally sure that's the case. You know, in my opinion, we should trust women to make the right choices and not regulate abortion any differently than we do with other health procedures. You know, we don't have like, what's the legal framework if, you know, the Supreme Court decides that heart catheterization is illegal or something like that. You know, we don't really regulate that,
right?
You know, and we do abortion, which, you know, is what America is about, I guess, and at least Kentucky. So Senate Bill 9 is the other abortion related bill that passed out of a chamber. So those have passed. HB 148 actually passed the House. SB 9 passed the Senate. So this is the fetal heartbeat bill. Only six senators voted against the bill, all of whom were from Lexington or Louisville. But interestingly, Julie Rackey Adams, a member of Republican leadership, also voted against it. So,
I mean, I think she's definitely the best Republican in the Senate.
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of surprised that she, you know, would have voted for this one. I assume she's you know, opposed to abortion. But I don't know. There's lots of Republicans who are not. That's like an overlooked fact many times, that there's lots and lots of Republicans.
Yeah, and I think this one, you know, I can see people voting for certain abortion restrictions, but this one is like very clearly unconstitutional under Roe v. Wade.
Right.
You know, I know that the hope is that it'd be overturned.
The hope of the Republicans is
but
that it's overturned.
As it stands now, I think this one goes a lot further than many abortion restrictions that we've passed, you know, before this year. So maybe that's why she would vote against this one and maybe not others.
Okay, Jasmine, that's enough about abortion. Why don't you tell us what are good bills and bad bills this week?
Okay, so my good bill is SB 238 that is sponsored by Senator Morgan McGarvey. This is a voter restoration bill that would restore the voting rights of people convicted of most felonies after the completion of their sentence. I think the best part of this bill is that there's no waiting period. A lot of expungement bills and other voter restoration laws usually might include some kind of waiting period, like 5 years or something like that. This would be after the completion of their sentence, and I think that is a really good part about it. Another good thing is that it does include most felonies, but I think there is a bad thing about it. It excludes murder, a few sex crimes, and bribery in an election.
Huh.
I just never think it's a good thing when a whole group is going to remain disenfranchised. That makes them harder to advocate in the future, I guess.
Right.
So I don't think this is a perfect bill by any means. I think drawing a line for voter restoration is kind of arbitrary when these people have completed their sentences as well.
Right.
I understand that maybe these are worse crimes to people, but there are...
There's a criminal justice system that exists that if it's bad enough that they shouldn't be able to vote, they should maybe still be in prison, right?
I mean, if they've completed their sentence, I just don't understand drawing a line in the sand for those things. And it will make things harder for those people to maybe ever advocate for
or just
the right to vote or reintegrate into society.
Right.
So I don't think this is a perfect bill, but it's a good bill, mm-hmm. I think. Also, this would be a constitutional amendment. So the ballot question we would see would say, are you in favor of allowing every resident of Kentucky otherwise entitled to vote the ability to do so automatically unless incarcerated or unless convicted of intentional murder, a sexual crime, treason, or bribery in an election?
It's a lot more descriptive than the Marcy's Law.
Yeah, I think this is a better ballot question than Marcy's Law. It actually lists what the law would do, and it lists the exceptions to it as well. I also think this is a good bill because we are currently one of the only states that doesn't have some type of restoration, except all we have is the pardon from the governor. And we know that most governors haven't done very many.
Right.
Steve Beshear tried to do a huge blanket nonviolent felony pardon, but then Matt Bevin overturned it via executive order. And we have over 300,000 disenfranchised people. enfranchised people in other states usually have some mechanism for getting their rights restored, and we do not, other than a governor's pardon. So I definitely think this is a good step.
Right.
The bill was introduced in the Senate on February 15th, and because it would require a constitutional amendment, it requires a supermajority. So that's good bill.
All right. What's the bad bill?
Okay. So this isn't criminal justice, but it's kind of criminal justice adjacent.
Sure.
This is HB 38. It's sponsored by Lynn Beckler, Regina Huff, Brandon Reed, Larry Elkins, Kim King, and Walker Thomas. So they're all Republicans, and they're mostly from Western Kentucky, but not all are from Western Kentucky.
Yeah, Regina Huff is from Eastern Kentucky.
Right.
Yeah.
This is the anti-sanctuary cities bill. This would require local law enforcement agencies and the state police to enforce immigration law. So this is why I say it's criminal justice adjacent, because
right.
it definitely has a huge effect on the people that are in the criminal justice system. It would also create new parts of the KRS that would prohibit local governments from adopting sanctuary policies. And it would also prohibit post-secondary educational institutions from enrolling, employing, or contracting with undocumented people.
Wow.
So this bill does a lot of bad things, I think.
Right.
I think the worst part of it to me is the law enforcement having to enforce immigration law, and the educational institutions aren't able to enroll, you know, undocumented.
It's like the opposite of the DREAM Act. It's like literally the
opposite.
Yeah, it's the
exactly.
It's the Nightmare Act.
So this bill was introduced on January 8th in the House, and it's been assigned to a committee. It's going to the state government committee.
Right.
So I think this is a bad bill. It takes away the opportunity for cities to become sanctuary cities, and I think that should be a choice for local governments. And it, you know, requires law enforcement to get in the business of enforcing immigration law instead
right.
of, you know, just protecting the community and
right.
things like that.
Yeah, which is bad enough. But then on top of it, the post-secondary piece is just wild. So, yeah, bad bill. That's a bad bill. Good find.
Yeah, bad bill,
that's
right?
One of the worst ones I've heard of. All right, Jasmine, there's some quick hits and also a short story. So the short story, I saw this yesterday. So there was a story in Politico about Elaine Chao and Mitch McConnell. And it's the piece was trying to make the case that they might be coordinating inappropriately. So the analysis that Politico wrote was an analysis of emails that were released by a group called American Oversight. American Oversight actually FOIA'd more than 1,000 pages of emails that went between the offices of Mitch McConnell and his wife, Elaine Chao, who is the Trump administration's Secretary of Transportation. You can actually peruse these at your leisure. They are on American Oversight's website. Very interesting stuff in there if you want to read people's emails. Less of emoji. Mitch McConnell's office makes good use of emoji. I learned that this week. So the emails show that a close relationship between the two offices has resulted in infrastructure grants and funding for highway projects for places in Kentucky where McConnell has allies. The Politico piece alleges that the existence of what they're calling a Kentucky channel for getting DOT projects approved is inappropriate. But one of the things they don't do is look at how many projects from other states are getting approved. They don't really do much. They just say, hey, show us all the connections between Elaine Chao's office and Mitch McConnell's office. And then are like, this seems like a lot. And that's about the extent of what the piece says. One of the emails highlighted by the piece is from Jim Adams. Jim Adams is the husband of State Senator Julie Rackey Adams and the executive director of what's called the OCS Level Playing Field Initiative, which is a maritime industry lobbyist. Kentucky's obviously got a huge maritime industry because we have a big river that goes across our entire northern border almost. So there's a bunch of stuff that comes up from the northeast, up from Pittsburgh and points north, and it makes its way down to the end of the Mississippi River and into the Gulf of Mexico by going right across that river. So we have a lot of maritime stuff that goes on there. And there were a couple emails from Jim Adams trying to get meetings, asking Mitch McConnell to help him set up a meeting. Mitch McConnell, as the senator for a Kentuckian, is advocating on behalf of one of his citizens to get a meeting with the Department of Transportation, that person just happens to be his wife. So, you know, I think that they're pointing out a lot of smoke. This political story does show like a lot of smoke. Hey, there is a lot of meetings that are going on with people in Kentucky. It seems like they're getting some preferential treatment. However, you know, there is no evidence of any fire. There's no like smoking gun here. Politico, though, is a publication with a lot of resources, and Mitch McConnell is a big target. He's up for re-election in 2020. So if there is some fire, I wouldn't be surprised if Politico, you know, did some digging and figured it out there. But, you know, if we're going to say, you know, that first piece from the ProPublica Herald Leader thing with Allison Lonergan Grimes wasn't a big deal, I think we have to say that this is also kind of like looks kind of bad, but not enough there to say it's,
right,
it's
especially
super bad.
If you don't know how many projects other states are getting
right
either. So this is kind of like that, more like that first one, but maybe there's the fires to come. I don't know.
Yeah. And like we said, Politico is a big operation. If it's there, though, they're probably going to find it. So there you go. Okay, Jasmine, there's several quick hits, lots of stuff we didn't manage to get to in order to write a big story, but stuff we need to keep you abreast of. So Passport Health decided to sue the state over the rate cuts it said created an existential crisis for them. We talked a little bit about this, but basically the Medicaid rates were disproportionately cut in the city of Louisville based on some adjustments that they made to the rates. The case is filed in where else but Franklin Circuit Court, so that's something to watch. We'll see if those judges there, who gets assigned it.
One of the two.
Right, and if Phil Shepard makes his way into the news again. Jasmine, Fort Campbell was set to receive a new middle school, which was to be paid for with federal money. But President Trump, you know, I guess you saw, he issued a national emergency. And that means that the money slated for the middle school might get moved towards building the wall. So,
ooh.
Yeah, no school.
Sorry,
yes,
NKY.
Yes, wall. Yeah, so there you go. No, it's actually SKY. Fort Campbell's on the Tennessee border. So.
Oh, I thought Fort Campbell was one of those.
Campbell County
Kentucky.
Is in northern Kentucky.
Okay.
Yeah, but
just
Fort
cut
Campbell.
Cut that part out,
yeah.
Too.
No, I'm going to leave that in.
No.
Yeah. You're
no.
You're going to sound bad.
No, don't. you make everybody else sound good.
Okay, Jasmine, according to Politico, again, another Politico thing, Chuck Schumer, who is the United States Minority Leader, a Democrat from New York, he is trying to recruit Amy McGrath to run against Mitch McConnell this year. What do you think? Do you think it's a good idea or a bad idea?
I mean, she couldn't win
in the 6th district.
In the 6th district, which includes one of the two most Democratic parts of the state. So I think that's tough.
But she was also running
against, I don't know.
She was running against Andy Barr, who's very popular.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mitch McConnell is not popular.
Right. It's really, I thought a lot about this piece when I read it, and I'm like, I really don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know
either.
If she could do better.
Here's what I've decided to think. She would make a really good United States Senator, and if she thinks she would win, and if she thinks it's a good idea for her to run, she should run. That's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, Jasmine, lastly, there are a couple of budget-related bills to watch. These deserve their whole own segment. We'll probably get to them next week. But HB 354 addresses the sales tax reforms. You know, there was a tax reform bill that passed that really messed up some sales tax stuff with nonprofits. There is now a bill that addresses that that's making its way through the legislature. It's passed a committee now. That's HB 354. There is indeed some stuff in there that does not relate to the sales tax, though. So we're going to probably do a whole segment about that soon. And then another thing to watch is HB 268. HB 268 opens up the budget, so it means it's going to need 60 votes to pass. And what it wants to do is it wants to spend an extra $150 million, $75 million of which would have to be borrowed. I don't really know exactly what it's going to be spent on, but I think I read that it was to make improvements to state parks. Some of it was going to go to post-secondary education stuff. And the reason they were doing it now is because they were afraid of their bond rating going down, so they wanted to borrow on better interest rates than we will have next year. Okay, but we'll do a whole segment about that next week. Both of these bills have passed a House committee, but they have a ways to go. So we have some time before we need to, you know, let you know all about them. But we will do that. We just want to put them on your
this
radar.
This is a preview.
Yeah. All right. That's it for this part. Let's listen to our interview with Chris Tobey.
Chris Tobey is a Democratic candidate for Kentucky State Auditor. He worked in the auditor's office and later was a KRS Board of Trustees member. In 2013, he became a Security and Exchanges whistleblower and wrote Kentucky Fried Pensions, which detailed KRS major exposure to alternative investments like hedge funds. This book was really instrumental in bringing the issue of Kentucky pensions to the forefront. Mr. Toby has stayed heavily involved in the pension issue and in 2018 wrote a follow-up book titled Kentucky Fried Pensions 2018. Mr. Toby, welcome to My Old Kentucky Podcast.
Jasmine, thank you for having me.
All right. So when it comes to Kentucky pensions, no one has really been closer to the story than you. You've been a board member, a whistleblower, and an author. So why is the next step running for Kentucky State Auditor for you?
Actually, it was part of the first step. 22 years ago, I was hired out of the private sector to work for Kentucky State Auditor Ed Hatchett, specifically on Kentucky pensions. And I've been kind of the leading independent expert in Kentucky pensions since that, and have been active in legislation to improve transparency and accountability. It was my suggestion in 2013 that led to the legislature requiring that the Kentucky State Auditor do an audit of the major retirement systems every 5 years, because in the past we just had more superficial outside audits. My expectation from the auditor's office was a thorough, tough audit, not another whitewash like we got. To my horror, Mike Harmon, during the holidays, released the audit, and it seemed to be just another partisan whitewash with minimal impact. It conveniently missed an illegal investment chairman making illegal investments who happened to have given the governor a good deal on a mansion. My first action as the new auditor in January 2020 would be to do an updated thorough audit of KRS to replace the weak work of Auditor Harmon.
All right.
So, yeah, any discussion that we have around pensions on this show is just going to be kind of inadequate. You know, we could talk for hours about the issues with the system that you've exposed over a long period of time. But since you're running for auditor, tell us about specifically about the problems that can be addressed by the auditor's office and how you plan to go about approaching those issues.
Yeah, it's an overall thing. Again, Kentucky's been ranked as one of the most corrupt state governments in the country. And again, you know, it's my process to take a look at it, and pensions is a place to start. The three main recommendations of both my books, Kentucky Fried Pensions, were first to fully fund the ARC. And by not, even though I don't do the funding, that's the legislature, I can bring transparency to that funding process. So right now, even though it may appear there's full funding, there really are some games being played around it, and bring transparency to that issue. Number two is full transparency of the investments and financials. And that's probably where I'll have the most impact, is being able to really have the full transparency we haven't before. The third has been to be an advocate to separate the county and city plan, CRS, from the KRS plan, which I think provides more transparency and also control. Right now, the governor almost controls city budgets, and we're seeing that problem right now happening because of that. And so we've gotten worse in all three areas almost every year, and continue to do so. And my first light is to shine a bright light on all this stuff going forward.
Okay, so you actually just mentioned this. You said, you know, Auditor Harmon's 2018 audit of the pension system was a whitewash. You said you're horrified by it. You mentioned a little bit here at the front about what made it so bad. But specifically, what about that 2018 audit really bothered you?
It's the lack of the Senate Bill 2 was a transparency law that I helped write with Republicans like Joe Bowen. And it forced transparency. There are transparency standards for each of the private equity and hedge fund investments called the CFA Asset Manager Code of Conduct. And then also there's the requirements to post these contracts on the webpage. And the retirement systems have declined, have broken these laws blatantly. And the auditor did not mention that in the notes of the audit. Now, he did say he was going to cover Senate Bill 2 later, but refused to even mention that there was an issue in the current audit.
Right. Yeah, it sounds a little bit like you've been working on some legislative changes for a long time, not as a legislator, but as an advocate, and stepping into the executive branch might be a way to kind of approach some of the problems more head on.
Well, it's just to enforce the legislation that's already in there.
Right,
right now, it's being ignored, and someone in the executive branch needs to step in and enforce these laws that we already have.
So you've written a lot about the characters who've caused the problems for Kentucky's pension system throughout the years. There's lots and lots of people who catch a lot of ire in your books. But is there anybody in public life that you think has actually done a good job on the pension issue?
Well, the people I've the legislation I work with has been Jim Wayne has been one of the real heroes of transparency in the General Assembly for 20 plus years, and Lisa Wilner's taken his mantle over as well, and it's taken House Bill 126, which enforces some of this year. Also on the Republican side, Senator Joe Bowen with his Senate Bill 2 did a really very good job, and I worked with him on that as well.
I mean, you've kind of been an equal opportunity critic in your books. You've gone at both parties for their lack of action through the years on the pension issues. You're running in this race as a Democrat, despite the fact that Democrats are having an increasingly more difficult time winning statewide races. So why did you declare to run as a Democrat?
I've been a Democrat for over, 30 years. I've saw no reason to change. While there's been Democratic corruption in Kentucky, the Republicans last 3 years have doubled down on this corruption, making this a pretty easy decision for me.
Yeah.
All right.
So pensions are a really serious issue. And I would say probably, if you ask anybody, it's probably the most important issue in the whole state. But of course, as the auditor, you have to face many different issues. We've had major problems in our higher education systems, in our secondary education systems, and throughout, throughout state police, all kinds of things that the auditor's office has had to deal with over the years. Do you worry about being seen as a single issue candidate?
Again, it is an issue that affects everything. I'd rather be a single issue candidate than a no issue candidate.
Right.
Being generally, I'm for transparency. at least I've got a real issue. But I'm not a one trick pony. I'm an actual expert in this. I spent nearly three years in this office as a senior staff level back in the late 90s. So I know the duties that you have to do statutorily. You have to make sure the state books are okay so that federal funds can flow through to other entities. But I've got a lot of other things on my list. The Yum Center,
sure.
U of L Foundation, and Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife. These are all audits that Harmon kind of halfway did and is not followed up on.
Yeah.
So those are three of the ones that I'm looking at. But, we got Brady Industries out there, which is a private equity partnership. We got the high salaries of the IT director and adoption czar. These are all kinds of issues out there that probably haven't begun to look at. But you have limited budget in the auditor's office. You have your statutory duties, and then you have to prioritize. Mm-hmm. And my priorities will probably be a little different than Adam Edelman's were, and what Mike's and the pension's going to be the top priority because I think it's where the most bang for the buck for taxpayer money can be had is in the pension area. Yeah,
there's no doubt that you're going to be able to attack this pension issue head on, but it is good to hear you mention those other things. Those are things I definitely think need to be added.
Yeah, and we've talked about a lot of those on our podcast in the past.
We need to talk about fish and wildlife. We haven't done that yet, but we should do that.
Yeah.
All right, so there's four candidates running for Kentucky State Auditor, and you're the only one with a background working in finance. So do you think it's important for the auditor to have a background in finance?
Well, of course I do. it's like, I've got more background than all the three candidates put together 10 times, and they really don't have any background. And again, but I'll be one of the most qualified auditors in history. Probably, my old boss, Ed Hatchett, was a very qualified person, but I'm not a political person. I'm more of an audit financial person. I have a master's degree in both accounting and finance. Again, I'm a chartered financial analyst, which is a investment type credential, and I've done all kinds of work with pension plans around the country, Maryland, Texas, and then worked on a lot of financial projects over my lifetime.
So just straight up, give us your elevator pitch. Why should Kentucky Democrats vote for you instead of the other three candidates for auditor this May?
Again, I'm the most experienced auditor in Kentucky's history. This is a too important position for taxpayers to give to a political climber or someone who just wants a paycheck. Position has a vital role in keeping Kentucky solvent, and you need an experienced person in the role.
All right, and finally, we've been asking a lot of candidates this, but do you have any thoughts for us about any of the other statewide races this year?
No. as in a primary, I stay neutral on these
That's
races.
Fair.
And again, I want to... That's what you do in a primary.
Yeah, we just like to ask people to hear what they have to say.
Maybe some secrets will come out.
Maybe someday somebody will answer the question. No, absolutely. Well, I'm sure you have your opinions, but I'm sure you're keeping them to yourself. But yeah, thank you so much for coming in. We really do appreciate this.
All right, thank you all for having me.
Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter @myoldkypod. We also have an Instagram page now with the same handle, @myoldkypod. So you can follow us on Instagram. We also have a Facebook page that you can like. You can find our podcast on the podcasting app of your choice, but we're now on another one. We're on Spotify now, so you can also listen to us on Spotify.
Yeah, if you usually listen to your podcasts on Spotify and you're like, ugh, I usually don't listen to my Old Kentucky podcast because it's not available on there. I have to switch apps. You no longer have to switch apps. You can stay
on Spotify. There now. We also have a weekly newsletter that you can find at forwardky.com/email, and you can also subscribe to Forward Kentucky's other great newsletters. Ours comes out on Fridays, and we post our show notes and usually a little something extra. And finally, you can sponsor us on Patreon for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast, and we now have some Patreon incentives. We'll mail you a sticker if you support us, even if it's just for $1 a month.
Yeah, plus a thank you card that says, thanks.
Yes.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. We will see you next week.